Americas, live and underway here on ESPN Plus from Doha. Take a look at Ahmad Bin Ali Stadium, where the proceedings just wrapped up between Canada and Belgium.
I wish our viewers could have gotten a view of producer Beto right there, fist pumping.
Like Tiger Woods in there,
yeah.
Huh? We know he's a golf guy. Look, we got a lot coming up in this show. Of course, we're going to be talking about the Canada game that just wrapped up, Costa Rica and Spain. Ooh. A shocking, maybe not a shocking result, but a shocking scoreline there for sure, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, you didn't see seven.
No, I mean, I saw a Costa Rica defeat, but yeah. Not seven. Not on Keylor. Not like that. No, señor.
Juan Carlos Osorio will be joining us a little bit later on. We're going to do a tactics session on the U.S. men's national team, talking a little bit about the game against Wales, but also spinning it forward to the match against England. And we'll have more reaction to Mexico's scoreless draw against Poland, including a bunch, Herc, of memo memes. But let's start with Canada, who just fell 1-0 against Belgium in Group F. Herc, your opening thoughts on the game?
I thought it was a John Herdman masterpiece.
Really?
Yes. John Herdman is the best coach in CONCACAF, and what he does so well is he takes away what you are good at. He makes you pay for it. When they played Mexico in the Azteca, he took away the ball. He made it a physical game. He made them run with Canada and Mexico couldn't. When he played the United States men's national team in Nashville, he gave them the ball. He sat in a low block and he said, you're not good enough with the ball. You're not creating enough in the final third. Let me pick you apart in transition. Today, he made it a physical battle and he outworked, outran, and out just everything Belgium. They were better on the ball. They created more opportunities in in the first 14 minutes, it was 7-1 in attempts at goal.
Okay. Too bad it's a 90-minute game. How did they lose the
game? Oh, look at this genius. Look at this genius. Is it 90 minutes, Seb? But if you score more, do you win the game?
Yes.
Oh, look, that's how they lost the game. If that's the type of response you want, that's how they lost the game, because they missed a penalty kick when they should have made it. They didn't get a penalty called for them when they should have had it. Mm-hmm. And in the only chance Belgium had, they made him pay for it. That's how you miss. That's how you miss the game. That's how you lose this game. Vittori misjudges the ball. It comes down. And in the only chance Belgium had, they took advantage of it right before half. And yet, Belgium couldn't figure Canada out. Belgium were chasing shadows. They made this Belgium team, the number two ranked team in the world, according to FIFA, look old and slow.
The first half of this game made me think a lot about the USA-Wales game, right? You saw Canada just kind of dominating Belgium.
You had that feeling, right?
In a way. And I was wondering, is Canada going to be able to keep this up, you know, into the second half? I think Belgium came to life, for sure. We got to give
them moments.
They were better as the game wore on. But it was not like USA-Wales, where it was a tale of
two halves.
Of one team dominating half and the other dominating in the second half. One thing that I thought was really telling about this game, Belgium has the lead at the half. It's not John Herdman that's making the changes, right? It's Roberto Martinez that's making
Puts
the changes.
In another six.
He makes two changes at the half. He takes off two attacking players for two much more defensive players. Was that him trying to hold the lead, or is that him adjusting to the disastrous first half?
Disastrous first half.
Okay.
That's him saying they're coming right down the middle.
Because a manager who makes two changes at the half is saying, hey, whatever happened in that open 45.
Kevin De Bruyne, how much did he touch the ball in the first half?
I mean, none. And when he did, he made the wrong decisions. He had a couple really clear chances.
He looked today like he was out of his element. He looked off. That said, the one player for Canada that looked off was surprisingly Alphonso Davies. He wasn't at his best. And maybe that's understandable. He's coming back from injury. He wants to do maybe a little too much. He misses the penalty kick. His confidence is shaken. But everybody else, Tejan Buchanan, a menace. You talk about a player whose stock goes up, that's Tejan. Richie Larea, very good. Jonathan David controlling the ball. The two center backs, and I know Vittori had that misjudged ball in the first half that cost him the goal. But other than that, they were so good. Just stifling defense. Just putting out fires before they start. Very good in transition. They did everything but score the goal. And that's the most important thing in football.
Yeah, you used the word contundente. Like, they weren't clinical in their finishing.
No, they weren't clinical.
When we were talking about it before the game ended. But I think we also have to point out that one of the big areas where Belgium has an advantage, not just over Canada, right, but over everybody in the world, is in goal. Thibaut Courtois is at Real Madrid for
a
reason. He's sick. In cleats, he must be 6'8". I mean, there's really almost nothing to shoot at. And I think that position right there, you can point out in this game as the difference, right?
Yeah.
Canada created very dangerous opportunities. Courtois made some big saves. And I thought on the one goal that Belgium scores, Michy Batshuayi, maybe Milan Borjan could have done more there.
It's a good finish by Batshuayi. I don't know if he could have done more. It's very difficult when you're going one way and they finish the other. You don't see it coming like that. I thought it was more on Vettori misjudging. Okay. I was talking to our colleague Nadim Onuwa, who's a center back by nature and you know his time in his playing career, and that's on the center back. You think it's maybe there, and then it surpasses you, and it's a 1v1 opportunity that he's very well with to finish. But going back to Courtois, Courtois is not only one of the best goalkeepers in the world, but he happens to be the best goalkeeper in this World Cup.
Right.
Think about who else is in this World Cup that you could say is the best goalkeeper. It's probably between him and Neuer. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who else?
No, I think
Alisson's Courtois, a good shout, yeah. Producer. That's why I said, well, Brazil's got two good goalkeepers, sure. But if I had to pick one, I would go with Courtois.
Any blame on the refs here from a Canadian perspective?
I don't like shifting blame, blaming on the ref.
What did you think of the officiating?
I thought Richie Larea was fouled.
Okay.
And in the event of, hey, here is VAR, go and look at it, I thought there was enough or sufficient evidence to call a penalty kick on that play.
So it was interesting,
Witzel,
right?
Witzel takes him down.
So we'll get to the penalty kick specifically with Davies versus Courtois in just a second. But in that instance, there's a handball in the box. VAR sees it and calls the ref over to the monitor.
Handball for you, right?
Oh, yeah.
No doubt.
Very
ball.
Clear there. Okay. Carrasco, right, I think is the guilty party. But then just before the 40th minute, Canada has this other penalty shout. There is a penalty check, but the referee doesn't go to the monitor.
Right.
I mean, that...
Or maybe he's not advised to go to the monitor.
Yes, but I think, especially in a subjective situation like that, right, a handball, you send him over to look at the handball. That's objectively a handball, right? There's no debate there. I think with Larea and Axel Witzel, there is a debate. It's a foul or a challenge in the box. The referee is the one that needs to see that,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
He's the one that needs to see that. For you, it was a penalty, stone cold?
Stone cold penalty.
Really?
100%. Yeah. Hmm. I don't think there's any question about it. In real time, and then when you slow it down, I think there's even more evidence towards it. There's an obvious contact there. And I know there's this narrative that, well, it's accidental. Their feet got tangled. That's not how the rules apply.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what you meant
to do. Hey, sorry, bro. It was an accident. My bad. Don't worry about it. No foul. It's a foul. There's contact. Exactly. It's not like if you're playing football in the NFL and there's accidental contact or any of that stuff.
Look, it was Canada's first World Cup game in 36 years. Obviously, it's disappointing to lose, but there's some history here as well. Atiba Hutchinson.
Yeah.
Can we give him some love? As I've got it here, is the oldest outfield starter.
What, 39 years old?
In World Cup history at
that
39 years old. And I think this was his 100th cap for Canada. So imagine, your 100th cap is also your World Cup debut. You got your country back on the biggest stage.
I can only think of one play where I thought he misplayed the play or he was caught, and that's the first half when Kevin De Bruyne actually came alive and he had this darting run, maybe 30, 40 yards, and he misplays the ball. He had somebody on the right. He doesn't play. He tries finding his nine. It doesn't work out. That's the only play I could say Atiba got caught in. Everything else, he was flawless. Everything else, he was very good. Especially knowing you have to protect those two center backs that if you think, all right, where can you hurt Canada? It's probably at pace with those two center backs. That wasn't the case. He was brilliant.
If the U.S. ran out of steam, why didn't Canada?
It's just a very well-worked team.
They're just in better shape, right?
No, but they know who they are. Exactly.
Okay.
They're so well coached.
Mm-hmm.
They're so difficult to play against. It's not just they're a spirited team. Hey, they're a fit team. They're well worked. John Herdman knows exactly who he has at his disposal, and they know exactly who John Herdman is and what they are supposed to do. There are no breakdowns in their play. Even when, at times, Belgium was able to break that press that they were so good at it. And this is what I love about Canada. They can play you many different ways.
Yeah, like you would think of them as a team. I think people would think of an underdog team. Hey, we're going to sit back, especially with
counter. Sit back and counter, right?
Because that's how they're built. I mean, they have two great wide players.
Isn't how they're built?
No, if you look at it on paper.
That's a common. Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, you got wide players who are very, very fast. They should be good in transition, right?
Right.
You've got finishers who are, again, at the CONCACAF level, very clinical. That would set up to me to be like, oh, this is going to be a sit and counter team. And yet when they're at their best is when they go into a World Cup against a talented team like Belgium, into Azteca, into Nashville against the United States, and they punch you right in the mouth.
So did you notice where
they have no fear. They have
absolutely no fear. Did you notice where Alphonso Davies started today?
Where?
When Alphonso Davies normally plays for the Canadian national team, it's an attacking midfielder role.
Right,
or
it's higher up the field.
Yeah. A winger, but he's higher up the field.
Mm-hmm.
He was in a line of five as a wingback today. They wanted to take away that element of speed that Belgium has on their right-hand side, and they took it away, and Belgium had no response of how to break them down with pace. And it was very predictable, and all of a sudden Canada had the ball, and Canada were dictating the pace of the game. That is too much. Now, I thought Canada was going to win this game mm-hmm. beforehand. I thought they were going to shock Belgium because I knew they would make Belgium look
old,
a
like
little
you said,
older.
Yeah.
A little
you
older.
Always say it, right? The international game is for the young, and that's the
and
difference
had,
between
and
these
I
two
had
teams.
Belgium as my World Cup
let down. Yeah.
So I thought Canada was surprised. I didn't think they would dominate
yeah.
Belgium this way. I mean, they opened the world's eyes to what Belgium is today. If you play against them in a physical manner, and if you take the ball away from them, and if you make them play your game, but also who Canada is and who they can be, because a lot of people out there are going to watch Canada and be like, wow, spirited bunch, they're fast. And but John Herdman can make them play so many different ways, and that's what I love about this Canadian team. He really is the best coach in CONCACAF.
Do you feel Canada was unlucky today?
I hate the term luck okay. because you generate that. But you have to feel for a team that played so well against such a yep. renowned opponent, and it has an opportunity via the penalty kick to go up, and it's your best player taking it, and he misses.
Yeah.
And then you have another opportunity on a penalty that's not called, and then you have chances, yep. and you still dominate. When most teams mentally would have let down, they did not. Unlucky, sure, you could say that, and you feel for him.
Yeah. Do you know why I asked unlucky?
Why?
Do you believe in curses?
I do not.
Have you heard of the Drake curse?
Come on, man.
Do you know what was playing in the stadium before the game kicked off?
We started from the bottom.
Now we're here. Yeah, that's Drake. I'm not saying.
There was a picture circulating of Drake in a...
I'm just saying. Let's get to the moment of the match here. It was, just about 10 minutes in. Alphonso Davies steps up to the penalty spot against Thibaut Courtois, and Courtois makes the save. Should Alphonso Davies have been the guy taking this penalty?
Two trains of thoughts on this, right? The first one is your most experienced player steps up and he hits it. I can think a few players that are more experienced.
Are you saying experienced. Most experienced at big stage? Because he's not the most experienced guy on the team.
Big stage.
Okay.
The nerves. Okay. Big stage. That would be Alphonso Davies. Nobody has a Champions League under their belt. Like nobody
That's totally fair.
Nobody's a bona fide starter on one of the best teams in the world like Alphonso
Davies. Other guys have more international experience, though. Other guys have more club experience.
They all have the same World Cup experience. That's just a fact, right? So we'll go from there. And the other is you take the guy who's best informed and most confident. Mm. Alphonso Davies has been injured.
Yes.
Alphonso Davies
was a doubt coming into this game.
He's also one of the younger players, even though he has that experience. It's everybody's first World Cup here for Canada. Mm-hmm. Okay? It's a reality. Canada has yet to score a World Cup goal.
Yep.
He wants that honor. He wants that bestowed upon him. It's probably his. He's the most famous Canadian player, bar none,
but
there's
that,
ever been.
Right. But is that a deciding factor for a coach? Like, oh, you're our guy. You're our poster boy. The best penalty taker should take it, right?
Who knows if that's the best penalty kick taker. But what I'm saying is I don't fault Alphonso Davies for being the one.
No, I don't fault him for stepping up. You want that in your poster boy, right? But I would just assume that...
Because the reality is nobody knows who the best penalty kick taker is but those guys on the field. But the Canadian national team. So if Alphonso Davies doesn't take it and somebody else misses, you're saying, yeah. Why isn't it Alphonso Davies
right.
the best
you're
player?
You're totally right. Yeah. Am I crazy? Yes. Am I crazy to think like, or I just had a vibe when he stepped up like, and I know he doesn't play necessarily in a defensive role for Canada, but he's a defender kind of at heart in terms of his club role with Bayern Munich, where obviously he doesn't take the penalties there. Statistically, if you look back at Canada's recent penalties, I know he's missed some of those big games, but I think of their last 10, including this one, he'd only taken 3. So they have other guys who are
right.
capable of taking and converting.
There's only one other player I would have been comfortable with.
Who?
Jonathan David.
Yeah, that was my thought, and honestly,
it would have probably been Estakio if it wasn't Alphonso
okay.
Davies. But the one that I would feel comfortable with is Jonathan David.
How many teams have you been on where a defensive player was the guy that took the penalties?
A few teams.
That felt rare for me.
A few teams.
Okay.
Yeah, a few teams. But
it's rare, right?
But he's not really a defensive player.
Aren't strikers mostly the best penalty takers?
Well, they're the ones who most want to take the penalty because it's the goal, right? You want to get yourself going with the goal.
Yeah.
But you want Alphonso Davies to get going. You want your best player to have a good tournament. And Alphonso Davies, I think he didn't have his greatest game, and I think it's more rhythm.
Okay.
It's more him coming off that injury. And then when he misses the penalty kick, I think then it becomes confidence. Then
really?
You see him making mistakes he normally wouldn't make.
You said Canada's level didn't drop after the penalty, and I agree with that. I was impressed. Did you feel like Davies' level was impacted?
I did. Mm. I did. I think it got to him a bit mentally. And how can it not?
We've heard from Poland's coach. It got to Robert Lewandowski.
Yeah, and he's such an important part to Canada's formation and the way they play and the way, you know, they tick. Mm-hmm. So could you imagine what it would have been like with an in-form Alphonso Davies running on all cylinders? Mm-hmm. I mean, this could have been very ugly for Belgium. Belgium did what they needed to do at the end of the day. They got their win. But Roberto Martinez is going to be very upset at the way this game played out. Honestly.
Right.
His team did not look like one of the favorites.
Maybe you don't want to say Canada were unlucky. Roberto Martinez has to be feeling lucky.
Very lucky.
He's got to be feeling
very lucky.
If you're
Roberto Martinez, you are counting your lucky stars. You are praying to whomever
you pray to
and thanking them for what they just bestowed upon you, because that was total domination by a Canadian national team that was nowhere near the world's map in football.
Yeah. So the stat is well documented, right? If you lose the first game of your World Cup, 89% of the time, you're going home. Yeah. This is a loss for Canada. You can't deny that. But it's a loss where you say, man, this team is good. Are their World Cup hopes still alive?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, you think they're going to be in that 1-in-10 team that loses the first game and still gets out?
Yeah, well, after watching Morocco, and especially because they tied Morocco and
that
Croatia.
That result is huge.
The result is huge, but also the way that they both showed you they played, you got to be feeling pretty good if you're Canada. You got to be saying, Croatia, if they play at that pace, okay, we can do this. We can not only hang with them, we can beat Croatia. And Morocco, I think they could beat Morocco as well. I think Canada's chances of advancing in this group because of the Morocco and Croatia result are still in their hands and very favorable. Now, that's assuming you play the same way you just played against the number two team ranked in the world.
One of the things that I think we talked about during the qualifying campaign about this Canadian team is that as good as they are in that kind of top 11, maybe they're not as deep as obviously the best teams in the world, but even some of the best teams in CONCACAF. Does that concern you about them maybe being able to maintain this level? I think the schedule is next is Croatia, third game Morocco.
Yes.
But I just want to put into context just how much energy they must have expended today.
You're right. And I remember.
Can you do that three games in a row?
As I was watching this game, I looked over and spoke to somebody about that. When you go to the bench, you automatically assume Kyle Larin, okay? You can't really maintain the same up-tempo pressure with a Kyle Larin. Jonathan Osorio, he's going to give you different things. Composure on the ball, vision, but it's not exactly that game-changing speed. You really are shifting the makeup, the dynamic of the team when you go to the bench, for better or worse. There are different things you can do with that, but it's not the same way you press. It's not the same way you grapple. It's not the same danger knowing you have Buchanan, Davies, Jonathan David. Okay? Estacio kind of dictating that play and where it goes. It's not the same when that depth gets tested.
Croatia or Morocco, who do you think is more accessible? I hate that it's Croatia next.
Accessible?
Yeah, for Canada.
Croatia.
Really?
More so than Morocco? Yeah, because
of the
speed.
Because they're an older team?
Yeah, yeah, just because of what I just saw from Belgium, I expect something similar from Croatia. Absolutely. Belgium is one of the most talented teams in the world. Canada just did that to one of the most talented teams in the world.
They look so off, Belgium. It was like...
You know me.
Yeah.
How long have I been talking about Canada doing this to Belgium?
Yeah, you've been saying it for a while. I just didn't expect it to, A, be as overwhelming as it was. I mean, you know the term sixes and sevens? That's what Belgium felt like.
You've been working with the FC.
I know. And I didn't expect it to last as long as it did. Okay, true. 15, 20 minutes.
No, you're right,
Seth.
You're right, because I didn't expect the domination to be so amplio, so just one-sided in long stretches of this game. And listen, there are people here who are going to say at the end, they're going to be telling you, so what? They still lost. Mm-hmm. They didn't dominate the most important thing. They still lost. Yeah, but Canada just turned some heads, just opened some eyes, and I think maybe their own. I think maybe themselves. Now they can believe more.
So Belgium sits atop the group, Croatia and Morocco, even on a point. Canada obviously last, and the computers say Canada with now just a 26% chance to advance out of Group F. More action from today at the World Cup. Costa Rica opening up against Spain in Group E action. And this one, Herc, over before it started. Spain were up 3-0 in the first half hour. They added four more in the second half for a final score of 7-0. For Spain, there were six different goal scorers. Ferran Torres, the only player to find the back of the net twice, as he had a brace. The numbers in this, Herc, were simply overwhelming. Not just the 7-0, right? Spain with 81.3% possession. That's the most in a World Cup game since 1966. Beyond that, Costa Rica is just the second team since 1966 not to register a single shot in a World Cup match. That is not a single shot on goal. That is a single shot, wow. Period.
Look at the passes completed by Spain.
Holy mackerel. 9-1 almost. There were a lot of problems in this one for Costa Rica. What was the biggest?
Luis Fernando Suarez.
The manager?
The manager. The biggest problem.
Okay.
Not only are you going against an evident talent level, because a CONCACAF team and a limited one at that, mm-hmm. let's be honest, versus one of the best teams in this tournament that was already favored.
Yeah, we could just say Costa Rica and Spain, right? Spain is a very good team.
But when that's the case, you have to help your team out. The way they started the game, a four-man back line, and Duarte is one of the center backs, who was abysmal, so bad he was taken out at half, over Kendall Waston, who was your legitimate starter for the majority of your World Cup qualifying campaign, where you were one of the best defensive teams in CONCACAF. And then you start Bennett, who's, I believe, 18 years old, Sunderland player, who's only got like 9 games. Joel Campbell on the wing. Contreras as your 9. Just everything was different. You experimented at the wrong time. And then when you want to shift and do things the right way, you put Kendall Watson in. Will that stabilize things a little? Sure, but it's Brian Ruiz you put it in. Like, Brian, I think he's older than me.
Easy.
No, I'm being honest. Yeah. It's you don't give your team enough solutions.
Yeah, he didn't give a chance.
You don't give your team a chance. Kendall Watson comes in. Yes, the scoreline indicates that it didn't get better, but you're already chasing the game. From the get-go, they turn into a line of 5. Things get somewhat a little bit stabilized, but it's still one of the best teams in the world. You're playing against some of the youngest players, most exciting young players in the world, and it shows you. And just one after the other, and the mistakes keep coming with some of Costa Rica's most experienced players.
I got 3 things written down here for biggest problem for Costa Rica. One is age,
yes.
Right? A lot of that I base again.
But they had some young players on the squad today.
Yeah,
the right back was 23. Bennett's 18.
Totally.
You know, they had some youth as well.
I got major 2018 Panama vibes from this team, right? That A, they're old, and B, they are here because of the relative weakness of CONCACAF,
sure.
Right? To me, Costa Rica.
The four best teams obviously made it. There was the four best teams in CONCACAF obviously made it. There was no fight for it.
But
know.
To me, there was a big gap. I know not in points, but there was a gap between the top 3 and Costa Rica. And I think when there's a gap between you and the top 3 in CONCACAF, when you then get to the actual elite of the international level, you will get exposed.
You know what? I don't know if the gap.
Let's also be honest. Who did they get in the international playoff? They got New Zealand, and they barely got through there. Had they drawn CONMEBOL, I don't think they're here. Had they drawn Australia?
Can I give you this food for thought? I don't think it's the gap is as big as you're saying in terms of level. I think it's in terms of ceiling, and that's
explain that difference to me.
So level is like on their. So level is what they've shown you throughout. Ceiling is how good they can
what
they're capable
forward, right.
of going
okay.
forward. And I think that's where the gap is between Costa Rica, because Costa Rica in the second half of World Cup qualifying mm-hmm. were probably the best team in CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. Think about it.
Yep.
Think
had,
about it.
And they had to. They
had
they
to only
be,
lost,
they
I believe,
start.
2 points. You know, they were that good and they had to be. It just didn't expect certain performances from certain players.
Let me go there, because the third thing I have written down is Kaylor.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to go.
There were a couple shots where you're like, oh, the Kaylor Navas of old saves that. And then I go back. 0 minutes for PSG this season across all comps. His last start for PSG, May of this year, in a game the PSG won 5-0, so he probably didn't even get any action then. I mean, we saw rust from Kaylor Navas, didn't we?
Yeah, Kaylor Navas, and I've said it before, is the most disrespected footballer of our generation. Mm-hmm. And the moment that Donnarumma goes to PSG, you're asking yourself why.
Yeah.
Why does Kaylor Navas
honestly,
keep getting
honestly, when Courtois goes to Real Madrid,
over?
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Courtois to Real Madrid. Why do they keep overlooking Kaylor Navas? And he doesn't play now for PSG. And that has affected him mentally. That has affected his form. And you could see it in the Asensio goal. It's a shot that's easily savable for a player of Kaylor Navas.
Elite goalies make that save.
Not only elite level, but history.
Right.
He's proven it time and time again. He has to make that save. He doesn't. And it wasn't that one. He looked rusty throughout. Him not playing for PSG has truly affected his psyche.
Is he partially to blame for that? Because I go back and think of the last few months of this show and how many different players that we talked about who are going to make a change in their club situation specifically for playing time ahead of this World Cup. He didn't or couldn't make that move, and I think it's cost him here. I think as he looks back on this World Cup, there may be some regrets for not getting out of PSG.
for my money, one of the best goalkeepers of our generation, the best goalkeeper in CONCACAF history. But in a situation today where in 2014 his play elevated his team, it's sunk Costa Rica today. When you see your best player, in theory, having that type of shocker, you're thinking, oh, it's not our day. And Keylor has been everything but that for Costa Rica. He tweeted before the game it was going to be a historic performance. It really was.
Yeah.
It was, but just...
Not in a good way.
Not in a good way for Costa Rica.
All right, so I'll ask you the same question about Costa Rica that I asked you about Canada. The stat is very clear, 89%. If you lose the first game, you're going home. This is just one loss. Is Costa Rica's World Cup over?
Yes, it's over. I mean, because you have to put in perspective how the group has played out and what has happened. Japan just surprised the world by beating Germany.
Even if Japan hadn't beat Germany, wouldn't you lose 7-0? Like, you ain't bouncing back from that, right?
It's very difficult to bounce back from that, just in the mental aspect of the game. You know, how can you get your psyche right to get your players right to get certain results? But when you look at how complicated this group is, when in theory you had two teams that could potentially win the World Cup, and I'm thinking Germany and Spain.
Right.
That's what you're thinking. Yeah. And it's Japan who beats Germany. And you're still thinking, Germany could still get out of this group.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Costa Rica doesn't want any part of Germany.
But now
right
you're
now.
Thinking, Japan could be that second team or even that first team.
Yeah.
So now, where does that leave Costa Rica? It's over.
Yeah.
I don't see how they've not shown us anything at any moment within that game versus Spain for you to feel, hey, there's something here they can build on.
I know most of your career was very successful. Surely you must have been in a dressing room once or twice in your life after a 5-6-7-0.
No.
No. What's it like?
Maybe.
What's it like and you know, what is said? You never went through it at a World Cup, but I'm sure
trying to think if we had a high profile
blowout.
Not like that. Not something that meant so much. Because you're thinking, you know, you could play friendlies when you're with the U.S. men's national team and you lose to Brazil like 4-1, right? But it's not the same feeling. It's not that gutting feeling. The only thing I could equate it to is when we covered Mexico and Mexico lost 7-0 to Chile. And just talking to the players who were part of that team, talking to Juan Carlos Osorio about that sinking feeling, about not knowing what to do. What can you do? What can you tell your players? How can you help them? Do you stop the bleeding? Or do you try to go for it? Do you try to get something out of it? It's got to be a mixed bag of emotions if you're Costa Rica, because you know you lost to a better team, but you know you're capable of much, much more, even if you can't prove it.
You mentioned the other results in Group E. Let's show you the images from what was a fantastic, fantastic game between Japan and Germany. The Germans actually went ahead through an Ilkay Gundogan penalty, but Japan storming back with two goals in the second half. Ritsu Don and Takuma Asano scoring 8 minutes apart to rally Japan from behind in a game and a victory that for the Japanese, Herc, I think everybody will say was fully, fully deserved.
Yeah, that touch by Asano was ridiculous. I mean, the ability to bring that down in stride and then get in front of your defender, make sure you cut that angle so he could only trip you up, cause a penalty kick, or he has to let you go, which was the case. And then the wherewithal to just roof that near post, almost like Landon Donovan versus Slovenia, for those of you who remember the 2010 World Cup. It was a brilliant goal.
It makes the 2-0 loss against Japan back in September a little more palatable, doesn't
it? For the U.S. men's national team?
Yeah.
Good luck, Chuck.
I mean,
Saudi Arabia and Japan, you know, both terrible performances for the U.S. men's national team. And you saw what Saudi Arabia was capable of versus Argentina. You saw what this Japan team just did to Germany. Maybe you don't feel too bad about it. I'm sure U.S. fans will have, regardless, something to complain about, because that's what we do.
The Japan upset is historic as they knocked off the four-time World Cup winner. So where is Group E after the first day of action? Spain looking really good, according to both the computers and odds makers, to advance. So is Japan. Germany got some work to do in Costa Rica. The computers giving Los Ticos just a 2% chance to advance.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How about the U.S. men's national team, Herc, 48 hours removed from the 1-1 draw against Wales and 48 hours from the showdown against England. The U.S. training behind closed doors at Al Gharafa Stadium. No new injuries to report. All players available for selection on Wednesday, according to a U.S. soccer spokesperson. Let's hear from some of the American players. We got Matt Turner and Cameron Carter-Vickers.
I think it's pretty clear. He's one of the young stars of world football. He's a top player, and I think you don't need me to tell anybody on our team how much of a threat that he poses in the game. He's scoring goals in a variety of ways. He's really developed, matured. He's gotten stronger. From what I understand, I've only worked with him for a few months, but I'm looking forward to playing against familiar faces. And again, I think he's a really, really good player that can change any game that he takes part in.
I think it'll be difficult. He's a top player. They got a squad full of top players, so I think we all know that we'll have to be putting one of our best performances to beat them. But that's what we're preparing to do, and hopefully we'll do that.
All right, so Matt Turner talking about Bukayo Saka, Arsenal teammate there. Cameron Carter-Vickers speaking about Harry Kane. Now, there's some news out of the England camp. Kane yesterday going for a scan on his right ankle. Today, reports are that he did train, so it doesn't sound like maybe it'll cost him at least too much time here at the World Cup. Maybe it could cost him some minutes against the United States. As you look at that English attack, is Harry Kane actually the guy that worries you most, or is it maybe somebody like Saka? From a U.S. perspective.
But Bukayo Saka scored 2 goals.
Yep.
So you're thinking you have to worry a lot about him.
Harry Kane had 2 assists.
He makes the team tick. He is the heart of that team. He really, as Harry Kane comes and goes, so does that English side. They're a much better team when he's on the field. So by all accounts, if he's not on the field, that increases your chances. He's one of the best nines in the world. And he's such a creative nine, a la Karim Benzema. He can make the team tick. Without scoring goals. He doesn't just contribute with his goals, even though he's a goal scorer.
What about Saka? How do you see him matching up against the American defense?
It's just such a scary player.
Yeah.
It can hurt you in so many different ways. 1v1, combining. He's young. He's naive in that way that he's not frightened of things. He's not scared of things. Yet, being so young, he's already got experience in major tournaments. The attention and everything comes with being a team like Arsenal, being in a team like England.
European championships, the pressure, the penalties.
Is just unfazed at this point. And coming off 2 goals, he's certainly going to be confident.
If Kane can't go, it's probably Callum Wilson. There's obviously a huge drop. Callum Wilson's a good player.
Who had 1 assist.
Yeah, he had an assist in the minutes that he came on. So
one ball touched an assist. So pick your poison. Look, the U.S. men's national team, we'll worry about Kane, and we'll try to occupy Kane, but it can't be solely focused on Kane because there's so many different players on the English national team that can hurt you, either starting or coming off the bench. It's pick your poison. They're a team that's ridiculously fast in 1v1 situations, a team that can break on you and turn the game on its head at any given notice, and a team that has some of the best players in the world, and certainly right now a tournament favorite.
Yeah. One more bit of news about England. Harry Maguire also training today. Remember, he came off in the game against Iran.
Cameron
Carter-Vickers was obviously talking. Look at you.
What?
That was sarcastic?
No, that's great news.
Great news for who?
For both.
I'm sure it'd be great news for you and England.
Because Darren Southgate's going to want him available, and I'm sure the U.S. men's national team is going to want him available
there.
As well.
He's a
center back that's more technical than he is physical. And you could probably exploit in transition.
All right. One quick note. Of course, you heard from Cameron Carter-Vickers there. He was born and raised in England, so maybe he gets some minutes against his native land. How did the United States do against Gareth Bale? Well, looks pretty good on paper until you consider the final moments of that USA-Wales game when Bale smashed home a penalty to draw things level at 1.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, enough hot air. Time to turn up the tactics here on Football Americas. That's why we bring El Profe, Juan Carlos Osorio. Great to have you with us. We had you take a look back. Wind the videotape back on the United States and Wales. Tactically, what did you like about what the United States did in their World Cup opener?
Well, there are the term intensity, and you can measure it in two aspects. One, when you are in possession of the ball, and the other part when you don't have the ball. And I think in the first half, both sides, both parts were well done by the U.S. team. The first part, the intensity on having the ball has to do with the player position that dictates the tempo. And I think it was Adams, number four.
Tyler Adams, yeah, he plays the six, uh-huh.
Yeah, and if you add the fact that he had some time on the ball so he can weigh his options and he can not only decide on what's the pass, the next pass, but he can also probably pass it, receive it, and go on the other side. So that was one of the biggest parts. And he was very well complemented by the other two midfielders. And the one thing that they did was there was a triangle. He played on his own, and then the other two played in the diagonal to his position. So he will always have the chance to go one pass back and hit it on the other side, or repeat that pass with the idea of bringing the team to one side and take the ball off to the other side. And the second part, I don't know why they did it. They didn't do it as long as I thought they could. And the other part was they have in the first half, the Americans have very good high pressure. The guy that leads the pressure went always for the ball. And if the ball went to the goalkeeper, he went with the goalkeeper. When you do that, you're basically marking 10 players, 11, because your goalkeeper cannot mark anybody, right? So you have to decide what is the free man on the other team. And I thought that initially they did it very well, because it could be that if the goalkeeper is a right-footed, so is the guy on his right side that you try to force him to go to. And on the other side, if you're left-footed, then you do the opposite. But at the second half, it was lost, and they didn't put any pressure in anybody.
You know, it's pretty obvious to me why that was lost. Timothy Weah was interviewed by our Sam Borden. He said they didn't have the energy because they spent it all in that first half. You have players like Timothy Weah who are coming from injury. Christian Pulisic, who's not playing regularly, doesn't have those minutes. Sergiño Dest coming from injury. Weston McKennie coming from injury. They ran out of steam. So my question to you is, as a coach, you see that you run out of steam, you have to send that message. How soon until you send that message of a change if you see your team is struggling? Because we didn't see it come until the 66th, 67th minute.
Yeah, it really felt like Wales took over in the second half, and there was no response almost, either from the American players or the American sideline.
Yeah. I think I had the chance to watch one of his interviews.
Greg Berhalter.
Yes, Mr. Berhalter. And the two things that I took out of the interview was, A, we didn't come here to play a part. We're here to perform. And B, the importance of the five subs, because they will keep the starting team fresh. So I was surprised that he didn't use them as soon as he could do it. Because I will imagine if you have a squad of 26 players, you should have some
various options,
players to to either keep the idea or change the idea.
I want to better understand why the game changed so dramatically from the first half to the second half. There's obviously a very important substitution that Rob Page, the manager of Wales, makes. Yep. He takes off Daniel James, a speed guy, an in-behind guy, and he puts in Kiefer Moore, who's 6'5", like a huge target. Yeah. How did that change the game in a way that the Americans then struggled to deal with? Because it felt like a very obvious move from Wales. We're going direct. We're going target. Should the Americans have been able to figure it out? Why did something so simple trip them up so much?
I think since 1863, when the English start playing
codified the rules of football. Association football, yeah.
Right. That was the case. It was more very direct, very individual game. And then it was in, like 2 years later, the Scottish brought in the passing game. Well, it's still the same. There are ways to play this game. And when you need a goal, a lot of teams just play direct football. And the aerial part of the game is crucial. Mm. It's crucial. And I think the fullbacks on U.S. national team, they don't have that. And the midfield are very small. They are very good on the ball, very good passing team, and they suffer because then they don't have a central midfielder like Adam that can shield the center forward, right? And the two center backs, one of them can go and compete, and the midfielder shields in front, and then the second central midfielder just go for the in case they had a flick on. So I think they suffer with the aerial game.
Hmm. You know, I'm curious, Juan Carlos, Profe, you were a guy that was known for your cambios, your rotations on the players, and that's used very much today in today's football, especially with these three game windows that we've seen in World Cup qualifying. But when it came to the two biggest games in the World Cup, you stayed with the same lineups.
Yeah.
If you're Greg Berhalter, do you stay with the lineup that works so well for 45 minutes and you're like, okay, I own responsibility, I will be better, they will be better, or do you try changing something versus England?
I would probably change a couple guys.
Well, it's a very different opponent, right? I mean, it almost begs for a different game plan.
Yeah, of course. And I particularly, I like to take in consideration the opposition. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people see the opposite team as a bunch of whatever, but it's a facilitator. It gives me something. If they put a high pressure on me, they give me the space in behind. If they drop off, they give me the space in front. And I think the key with substitution is they are nominal subs and structural subs. Mm. And sometimes you have to decide, well, I change the structure or I just change the player for a player, but I keep the idea.
So we saw England put up 6 goals. Well, it doesn't seem there like there's a lot of weaknesses, but if Greg Berhalter called you today and he said, Juan Carlos, where's the weakness in England? Where do we attack them? What would you tell him?
I would say the 4-3-3, the way they're trying to play, you probably match them up.
Mm-hmm. Mirror, espejo.
Exactly. And it will be a lot of duels. The thing in the middle, I will play 2-1. So if Mount is the number 10,
sorry,
I will
instead
have
of the
players.
1-2 that we saw this time.
Yeah.
So you would change that.
I will
that.
Play 2-1. Okay. Yeah.
Why? So go on.
Because I think that one has to keep a positional space and be around Mount. Because that's like the ball out for the English,
outlet.
The outlet for the English team, and the second midfielder can go with the midfielder that stays open or gets open.
Is it a doble contención? Is it a double six there?
No, I would say that. I will play number 6 and a number 8.
Okay.
Do you sit back or do you go at a team that's so dynamic and off the bench gets even more dynamic? Mm.
No, I would think that I will keep like similar to Senegal, a middle block, probably 5-10 meters behind the semicircle. So you still give them enough to come to you. You put pressure in the middle third and then you can as well just hit them on the break.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So precaution against England is kind of what you're preaching.
I would think so, yes, because they have certainly one of the strongest squad. You saw the subs. Grealish come on,
Rashford.
Foden, Rashford. I mean, they probably start. I don't know. Gareth Southgate has a lot of opportunities there.
Mm-hmm. Bad problems, right? Good problems to have if you're a coach, I think is what
they always say. They are good problems, yes. Absolutely.
All right, there he is, Profe. Thanks. Always great to have you with us here on Football Americas. I'm always picking up more knowledge. Herc already knows everything about soccer, but, man, I don't know
just
anything.
About.
I'm leaving
just
here with
well,
the PhD.
Well, compared to you.
All right, so El Profe giving us a little history lesson there, going all the way back to 1863. How about a look at U.S. World Cup history after avoiding defeat in their opening game? It's actually pretty good. The U.S. 5-for-5 advancing out of the group when they don't lose their first game at the World Cup, as was the case a couple days ago in the 1-1 against Wales. All right, time for a meme cap or a memo meme cap after the big penalty save against Robert Lewandowski. We got San Memo there represented quite well. Of course, Mexico, a very pious nation. Angel de la Independencia. You know, whenever Mexico has a big win at the World Cup, vámonos al Angel. The angel there replaced with Memo Ochoa. More meme action. Herc, you saw this one. Memo
look
making his
goats.
Way to the GQ ad.
Look at those goats. Who is that? Memo and two guys playing chess.
Memo and two fans. The Pope even finding inspiration in the great San Memo. And perhaps not just inspiration, but salvation. What else? Ochoa's to the World Cup, what Mariah Carey is to Christmas. That is a good one.
Except less annoying. It's something I heard.
Wow.
Not mine. Just
shade
the response
for
I heard.
Mariah Carey. And then Lord of the Rings reference here, Herc.
Yeah. No, he is that guy, right? Every 4 years. He's that guy.
You shall not pass. In this case, the U, Robert Lewandowski. More Mexico news here off the field. The FIFA Disciplinary Committee has opened proceedings against the Mexican FA, FMF obviously, due to chants by Mexican supporters during the Mexico-Poland game. Now, what chant exactly, we don't know. It was not in the FIFA release. What we do know is the proceedings are opened on the basis of Article 13 of FIFA's disciplinary code. Herc. Your thoughts on the latest bit of moral policing, shall we say, from our FIFA overlords?
Yeah, I think this is a bit of confusion here on their part. It's the equivalent to the YSA chant that you hear or you did hear in MLS.
Well, let's put it this way. We were not in the stadium, but we had Alexis Nunez reporting on our show the other night. She was there. She said she did not hear the homophobic chant that we have talked about throughout the history of the show.
Yes.
She heard a profane chant from Mexican fans.
Equivalent to your socks have holes.
That's one way to say it, yes.
Well, that's the chant I heard in Orlando, but it's something similar to that.
I'm trying to not get us in trouble here, man.
That's what they chant in Orlando. Your socks have holes when they kick off. Okay, it's profane. This one, yes, sure. Mm-hmm. Profanity. I wouldn't want it around my kids because they're young. But is it equivalent to the homophobic chant?
No.
Do I think anything will come about it? No.
So FIFA also opened proceedings against Ecuador. In the release for that one, they said it was about the homophobic chants. But even in the example of Ecuador, when you've decided to put a World Cup in a country where homosexuality is illegal, when you're telling your captains that they cannot wear
how do you take them seriously,
armbands that show solidarity to the LGBTQ+ community, how are you then going to turn around to an FA and fine them for their fans doing a homophobic chant? I mean,
Where's the credibility?
I mean, it's such a double standard. It's hypocrisy. It's ludicrous.
Welcome to FIFA.
I guess so.
Look where we are.
I know. It's just, I mean, it feels cheap, and I feel like basically what's come of this World Cup is wherever we go next, there is no moral high ground. There is no moral authority for FIFA. Like, whatever they want to do, in a few years, they might just backpedal on that, and it might change.
You mean kind of like now?
Yeah. It's a joke.
Okay.
I mean, it is, isn't it?
I mean, it is what it is with FIFA. There's no two ways about it. They go back on sponsors who spent millions and millions of dollars because they can.
Yeah.
Because the country can pay for it. Because, we care more about the bottom dollar.
Right. It's like, do you really care about the LGBTQ+ community all that much to fine Ecuador when you made Belgium take off? I mean, literally, the word love on the back of the
shirt.
When
you put it in this country. Start there.
Yes, no, but I mean, they're so worried about love on the back, which is like the smallest almost pathetic show of solidarity, right? It's hidden. It's hidden. And FIFA wanted Belgium to take that off. Where we go with FIFA from here, I don't really know. But I think from the top down, you know, this organization has to really take a look in the mirror. Time to check in on Twitter, right? Because specifically the account of Hector Herrera.
Okay.
Why the account of Hector Herrera? Because he was tweeting after Mexico's scoreless draw against Poland. And he says, merecíamos más. We deserve more. He continues. He's happy with the effort. Now time to focus on our next opponent. We stay focused. Herc, Mexico deserved more. Is there a get lost here for Hector Herrera, or is he speaking truth?
You know Hector Herrera's my man.
He is your man.
I can't tell him to get lost.
You guys
lost.
Go back how far? Like 15
when he was
years?
19. Yeah. Is it 15 years?
It's not quite 15, but it's been a while.
But the comment, you deserved more, no, you did not deserve more. One would say you were lucky to leave there with the point because you had a penalty kick called against you. Yes, you had the majority, the lion's share of possession, but you were toothless with it. You had no punch. You had a ball that Alexis Vega hit off his shoulder that went about 2-3 feet wide of the post, and then you had a ball that Edson, from a very vertical angle, hit that Henry Martin flicks, and Chesney makes a save on it. That was it!
That was it.
That was your offense! They had a penalty kick with one of the world's best forwards taking the penalty kick.
A penalty kick that many said should not have been a penalty kick.
It was a penalty kick. It was a penalty kick.
You thought it was a foul?
I thought it was a foul. And what's even worse is Hector Moreno is a much better player than that to give that penalty kick away. He's much more
experienced.
See,
I think Lewandowski draws the contact first there. At that point, he's the one that hits Achache.
He literally
destabilizes
his knee.
Yeah, because he's falling backwards because he just got hit.
Hit the weight room.
Easy for you to say.
No. I'm serious on this one. I like Hector Moreno. I think he could be a very good center back in different situations, and that's not one of the things that I expect from a center back of his capabilities. If he's going to get beat, I think it's going to get beat with speed, with pace, you know, a combination play where he can't reach the guy. Not because he lunges like that in that moment. It was uncharacteristic of Hector Moreno, who I think had a decent game up until then, honestly. It wasn't terrible for handling Robert Lewandowski.
Deserved is kind of generally stupid in soccer, right?
But
if anybody deserves something from a result, you'd say Canada deserves something from their game against Belgium, right?
Yes.
They did enough to feel like, man, like luck just wasn't on our side today.
We share a set, and I should say there are a bunch of sets around here with a bunch of Argentine press.
Yes, they're literally right next door to us.
Yeah, ex-footballers. Mm-hmm. Crespo, Kun Agüero, you know, Diego Latorre.
Zabaleta,
mm-hmm. These type of ex-footballers. Oscar Ruggeri, thank you,
Producer Beto.
Professor Beto, le iba a decir. Ahora,
no, sí, es
favor,
profe.
Professor Beto. This type of player.
No respect.
And when they talk, es que va a ser difícil el juego contra México. This is going to be a tough game against Mexico. All right, what did Mexico show you that you're worried about?
Yeah. No, they're not worried about Mexico. They're worried about themselves.
Yeah. Because they can't tell you why they're worried about Mexico from watching Poland, that Poland game. Because, yeah, okay, they had majority of the ball, but what did you do with that? That's why merecimos más is not quite accurate.
Yeah, I didn't like this for a couple reasons, because Mexico didn't do enough, specifically in the final third, right? If you're not dangerous, I don't really think you can, like, ask and say that this is something, you know, that you deserved. The other thing is, I don't want that in the locker room. I don't want Mexico coming out of that game somehow feeling like we played well enough, we were good enough, that was enough. There needs to be more.
Yeah.
And I hope that not just Hector Herrera, but the rest of the team, Tata Martino, everybody kind of feels that urgency.
If you thought
that was good enough, it's not going to be good enough, not for the upcoming games, that's for sure. All right, let's take a look at some of the statistics for this Mexican national team, who, again, are trying to get through the group phase for an 8th straight tournament. Well, I guess on possession, maybe Acha has a point, but if you go on expected goals, Poland had more, but expected goals off open play, neither really did anything, let's be honest. So probably at the end of the day, Herc, a scoreless draw, a fair and deserved
zero
result.
Zero goals in the last three World Cup matches.
Both.
I didn't see that one coming.
All right, querido Hercules, it is time now to check the mentions. Love getting questions from folks off of Twitter. We can address here on Football Americas. This is from Anna. What are your thoughts on Germany's protest before facing Japan? For those that didn't see this, the German players in their traditional starting 11 picture on the field covered their mouths in an act of protest against FIFA's decision not to allow them to wear the One Love armband. Your thoughts?
It's pretty much what we just mentioned about the hypocrisy from FIFA. You're going to silence these players while being in a country that you chose because of the bottom dollar. Mm-hmm. However that process was done, everybody knows how it was done, and you're here, and you told them they would be allowed to express themselves, and now you're handcuffing them in that way. You're muzzling them in that way. It's a start. You know, I wish there could be more. I wish there was more that could be done, honestly. But taking away the armbands, risking the yellow card, all these different things, it's they're muzzling these players.
So the German FA released a statement saying that denying us the One Love armband is the same as denying us a voice. I feel, again, here, obviously for those in the LGBTQ community who surely are being kind of re-traumatized by all this being brought up again, they're obviously that's the most important. I think beyond that, I feel for the players. Like, and here's why. We're seeing players, athletes, in the moment of, like, coronating moment of their career, having to make political stands, having to make stands on human rights. It's not just Germany who do it right before the game. We also saw it from Iran, right? Remember, they don't sing the national anthem. And look at both of those teams, right? Both of those teams who take a stand before the game end up losing. We're surprised to see Germany lose. Say what you will about Iran, we were surprised to see them ship six against England. And I wonder if when you're having to do this right before the game, if that could be a factor that impacts you and your focus on what is actually coming in the moment that is the most important of your career. And that's why I feel bad for these players.
I feel terrible for these players because they're being seen as scapegoats if you don't do it. If you just concentrate on the game, if you don't want to risk a yellow card, if you don't take a stand. The onus should be on FIFA and these FAs for holding a tournament in a country like Qatar.
All right, next question on Check the Mentions. Let's see who the lucky one was. I think this has to do with CONCACAF, yes? Rank CONCACAF teams' performances after the first set of group stage matches. All right, we've seen everybody once, Herc.
Canada won. Mm-hmm. I would go United States men's national team 2A.
Really?
Mexico 2B. And then Costa Rica. Yeah, because they...
How?
Because the first half, you saw a ceiling. Like, you've not seen a ceiling with Mexico. Mexico still look... you know what I mean?
Okay.
They've not shown you
the
they can win
the best that we saw from the U.S.
in that game, in a
was
game.
Was better than the best that we saw from Mexico.
Yes.
That's where you're going with the tiebreaker.
But the result was the same.
Yeah.
So if I had to choose, I'd go 2A U.S., 2B Mexico.
It's funny, like the team that looked the best is pretty obvious.
Correct.
Canada,
yeah.
Even though they lost.
Even though they
lost. The team that looked the worst is obvious, Costa Rica. No doubt about that.
Would you agree with my assessment?
I would actually put Mexico ahead of the U.S.
Interesting.
So here's why.
Okay.
You yourself said that Poland was a better team than Wales, right? So against better competition,
Who played better, Poland or Wales?
I mean, doesn't that, some
who
of that
played, yes,
well,
it does.
But some of that comes down
who,
to the opponent,
who showed,
right?
Who
I give Mexico credit for making Poland look back. So in the first half, when you put it that way, what I would say looked worse is Mexico never looked as out of control as Wales did. So you're going off. You're saying the U.S.
except for the penalty kick.
You're saying the U.S.'s ceiling.
That Poland drew.
You're saying the U.S.'s ceiling was better than Mexico's ceiling.
Right.
I will agree with you there.
Okay.
I thought the U.S. basement looked much worse and much more vulnerable than Mexico's basement against better competition. So I would put Mexico then above the United States. Again, like you're putting it 2A, 2B. For me, it's kind of inconsequential there. It's very fine margins. I would give Mexico the edge.
Tomato, tomato.
Tomato, tomato. All right, our last question here on Check the Mentions, and it's looking ahead to the United States against England, Herc. Who are you going with for your front three against the three Lions for the red, white, and blue?
One, two, three,
I am going for the front three?
The front three.
The front three isn't my... question.
Well, that's the question from Natum's interior decorator, a big fan of ESPN and FC and Football Americas.
I go for the same front three.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the midfield three that I'm worried about.
Okay, what are you doing there?
Gio Reyna in there, baby.
Gio Reyna in there. Okay, from the start.
If he's healthy, get Gio Reyna in there.
I'm surprised you didn't go with Luca Della Torre, especially since we have quite a big bet riding on that.
Yeah, I think he'll
What was
get
it, like
game.
6 months ago? You said 99.99% he would start
yeah,
a game.
And what's
going to
happen
Cup?
When he starts this game? You going to buy me my shoes here in Qatar?
Hey, a bet's a bet, man.
Qatar, these shoes in Qatar.
If nothing, I'm a man of honor. What, you can't even respond with a straight face to that?
Honor our schedule and show up on time is what I want
okay.
you to
Okay. Okay. That's a low blow. That's a low blow. We'll explain that low blow on tomorrow's edition yeah. of Football Americas. All right. That's it. Third edition of the show. We will be back tomorrow, which is, of course, Thanksgiving. We
Let
have
me read
so,
this.
Oh, what is it? What do you got?
Is this Herdman? John Herdman. What he just said, he says, I just told them they belong here. We're going to go and F Croatia next. It's as simple as that.
Ooh. John Herdman's ready. We're ready for tomorrow as well. It's full preview of United States against England. We're going to have DeMarcus Beasley stop by. We're going to talk to Mark Ogden as well. 4 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN+. We'll see you then. From all of us here in Qatar, to all of you back home, have a wonderful, wonderful Thanksgiving.